This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. Wage theft is all around us. If you talk to your friends, family, neighbors, coworkers, a familiar waitress, maybe they'll tell you the grim story about hours worked and no compensation, sometimes by a big corporation with a billion-dollar profit margin. Maybe it's happened to you. But if you've gotten used to it and you don't want to cause problems and lose your job, then maybe you don't say anything about it. But wage theft is being told to work off the clock, being discouraged from taking your earned vacation hours, tips being stolen by management, minimum wage violations, employee misclassification, illegal deductions in pay, or not even being paid at all for your work. It's happening to blue-collar, white-collar, legal, and undocumented workers. We're going to be spending the next hour talking about wage theft and what you can do to protect yourself. Our first guest is David M. Feldman. He is the city attorney for the city of Houston. Last week, Houston's city council passed an ordinance making them the first in Texas that takes aim at wage theft. Houston is second only to New York City in the number of Fortune 500 businesses headquartered there. Mr. Feldman, welcome to The Source.
Thank you very much.
So why did Houston decide to take action against wage theft?
Well, the groups in the city that are most concerned about the problem, like, for example, an organization known as Faith and Justice and the Diocese of Galveston-Houston, United Way, organizations such as that, first began approaching us about 2 years ago, trying to impress upon the city government the significance of the problem, and asking that we try to do something to engage at a local level to bring it to the attention of the public and engage in some kind of enforcement effort locally, recognizing that we have state laws that prohibit it both from a criminal and civil standpoint. It was a question of really bringing attention to it and giving the city an opportunity to weigh in.
So the final ordinance, what does the final ordinance actually say?
Well, it's got two primary components. The first is with respect to actual complaints of wage theft. It provides a mechanism so that anyone who performs work under a city contract who believes that they have been the victim of wage theft can come forward and file a complaint that it would be processed by the Office of Inspector General within the city. And if the complaint is found to be meritorious, the OIG, as we call it, would seek resolution of the complaint. Another key provision of it has to do with what we call a database, where the city will maintain a list of all employers in the local area who have either been convicted of wage theft, that is, criminally convicted of wage theft, or who are the subject of a civil judgment for wage theft, either based on the inaction of an administrative penalty by the Texas Workforce Commission or through a lawsuit brought directly by an aggrieved worker. And if an employer is on the database, then they cannot receive a city contract, nor can, if it's the subject of a criminal conviction, they cannot receive certain licenses or permits.
I think that's part. If you've been convicted of wage theft and then you can't do business or you can't be licensed by or permitted by the city of Houston, that seems pretty substantial.
Well, we hope that if nothing else, it serves as a deterrent for any person who wants to do business with the city or do business in the city to not engage in that kind of behavior. As I indicated, we're trying to send a message with this. that this is a problem and that it's something that the city is not going to tolerate.
Was this a tough battle, tough to get through a city council? Was it controversial?
It was. And you know, to my surprise, to some degree, because when we initially came forward with the draft ordinance some months ago, it seemed to be well received generally. When we came back with another draft, it was not as well received. I think initially employer or business groups, weren't paying that much attention to it. But then once they engaged, it kind of became the classic tension between labor and management. And so we had to work hard to come up with a compromise that still got the message across, still could serve as a deterrent, provided penalties, but at the same time could pass muster with both sides of the aisle.
You're not asking businesses to do any additional paperwork or go through any more red tape bureaucracy other than they're already doing to run their businesses. You're just following up on other people's investigations and convictions if they exist.
Well, as far as the database is concerned, yes. But if it is a matter of wage theft occurring in connection with work performed under a city contract, the city, and a complaint is filed with the city, with the OIG, then the city will investigate through the Office of Inspector General. We have labor lawyers in that office that handle employment complaints of all kinds involving city workers. So this is a natural adjunct to their investigative work, and that would, you know, include the active involvement with respect to investigating a wage theft complaint.
So even though you did have some pushback from members of the business community, it did pass eventually unanimously. So that's a pretty strong signal sent that this was been taken seriously by the city council.
Yes, I would agree with that. Ultimately, once we were able to bring both the worker side and the employer side together, the politics was gone, and everyone agrees that it's a problem that has to be addressed and that the city needed to take the lead on doing that.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us, David M. Feldman. He is the city attorney for the city of Houston, talking about a recent ordinance passed there last week, taking on wage theft. The first city in Texas to take direct action targeting wage theft. We're going to continue our conversation talking about wage theft, a growing problem in the United States and here in Texas. Mr. Feldman, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And we will continue this conversation when we come back. And we ask callers to join in, tell us about your stories, 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the growing problem of wage theft. Bosses and corporations who find ways to cheat their employees out of their full pay and benefits. We invite you to call in, tell us what you know about the situation, your firsthand experience. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. One Texas organization is working to fight wage theft and other and install other worker protections. Christina Zinzun is the executive director of the Workers Defense Project. Welcome to The Source, Christina.
Thanks for having me.
So, Christina, what we were talking just now about Houston's new ordinance targeting wage theft. What's your opinion about that ordinance and its effectiveness?
Well, we're really glad to see the law pass in Houston. It's one of the largest cities in the country, so I think it sends not just an important message within Texas, but across the country that allowing workers' rights to be violated and some of the most basic things like being paid for their work is not going to be tolerated anymore. And the law does some really critical things like denying building and permits to repeat violators or not allowing them to continue to have contracts with the city for repeat violators, which I think we've seen in the past has been a failure without these kinds of rules at the local level.
So you applaud Houston's actions. Do you think it goes far enough?
I think it's an important step forward. I think that we could have stronger rules at the state level. You know, the last legislative session, there was a bill proposed just a rule change, something simple to allow a worker up to a year to file a claim with the state agency from 6 months, which often, you know, these rules are really bureaucratic. It's hard to find the right government agency often for workers to file their claim, and so we just wanted to extend the period, and that didn't move forward. And also, we simply do not have enough fines. Right now, it's more than anything just slap on the wrist for employers when they don't pay their workers. And there needs to be much stronger consequences so that it doesn't become a business practice as we have seen it become in certain industries, particularly the construction industry. It's estimated that 1 in 5 construction workers aren't paid for their work. I mean, that's a huge number of workers that are regularly not being paid for their hard work.
So are you aware of any other cities in Texas who are following Houston's lead? I know you're active in Austin, Dallas. Any sign that this is growing across the state?
Well, there was a bill passed that criminalized wage theft 2 legislative sessions ago in Texas that our organization and others helped pass in Texas that allows county prosecutors to prosecute employers that intentionally don't pay their workers and actually have them arrested. And that law is being implemented in El Paso. We're working to implement it in Dallas and has been implemented in Austin and has really helped go after some of the worst violators that regularly weren't paying workers or threatening violence if they complained about not being paid for their work.
So, Christina, over at the Workers' Defense Project, I know you work really closely, especially with construction workers. Describe what it's like. What is it for construction workers? What kind of problems are they confronted with when it comes to wage theft?
Well, one of the first cases I worked on was so people can understand just how rampant it is. It was for a group of 5 construction workers. They all answered an ad in the newspaper to do residential construction. And they all went and worked, and one of those workers, Francisco, at the end of the week, he got his check. He was a single father. Tried to cash his check, and the employer had already canceled it. And that employer did that to all of those workers, canceled the checks before they could even cash them. And then when they said they were going to report him, he not only threatened them with physical harm, but to have them deported, even though they were permanent legal residents. And that's the kind of thing that workers are regularly facing in the construction industry. We have offices in Austin and in Dallas where we service workers who aren't paid for their work, and dozens of workers come forward every week working in some of our most important industries. And I want to add, it's not just a consequence, something that impacts workers, but it also impacts employers, because there are honest employers that are trying to do right by their workers to make sure they have a safe working environment, that they get a good wage. And there's just no way that they can compete fairly with employers that don't even want to pay their workers. And like for us, the construction industry, 1 in 5 workers not being paid. The number of employers doing this now as a business practice is outrageous and really affecting the entire industry and good employers as well.
I want to get some callers on the air. The number is 614-8980. Ed has called in. Ed, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'm an attorney, and I was curious to find out, for the edification of the workers, what level of proof must they give whomever they're going to complain about this to? Because this sounds like it could be in the arena of he said, she said, a screaming match where you know it happened to you, but you have no way of proving it happened. Now, the example is that they issue checks and cancel them, and that's one way. But what about the deal where the guy just didn't get paid, period?
Okay, Ed, thank you for that call. Let's see if Christina can help us answer that.
Well, I think that ends up happening a lot. Really, the burden in the law is clear that it's on the employer to record workers' hours, their time, But often these employers that aren't paying their workers correctly aren't even doing that. But the law is also clear that if a worker brings forward their own records that they've kept or has witnesses of other workers, that is taken to be the legitimate source of the hours worked, of the wages owed. And so that's what we do on many of the cases of the workers that we represent or help get their wages back.
So, Christina, do the workers know their rights, or do they feel that they don't have any rights?
Well, I think all workers realize that they have a right to be paid for their work, that we abolished slavery long ago in this country. But it is a common practice. I don't think workers know fully all of their rights. But they do know that basic right, that they should have a safe working environment, that they should be paid for their work. And I find that workers are very willing to come forward, but that we have really challenging government agencies for them to maneuver through, and that we simply do not have enough cops on the jobs, that is government enforcement, to uphold the standards that we need and work for workers' rights to be fully protected in this country.
Now, I know over at the Workers' Defense Project, y'all are dealing mainly with, like, construction workers. Is that right?
Well, we service workers in all industries, but 80% of the workers that come to our organization work in construction. And it's about, in Texas, there are a million construction workers in Texas, so one of the largest and most important industries in our state.
But I know that wage theft happens to white collar workers also. Many times people are encouraged to, are told, you know, they are expected to not take a lunch break, or to work through their lunch break, or work off the clock at their desk and get all this work done, even though they're told they can't get any overtime.
That's right. We see it's becoming an increasingly common practice in various industries. We have gotten cases from secretarial staff, administrative staff, even other industries that I think we were surprised to see people come through, or people doing telecommunications work that weren't being paid. In fact, there's even sometimes seminars that go on to talk about how you can lower your overhead, and it's really just really, really close interpretations of skirting the law that are close to wage theft that are given to some businesses, these seminars that try and teach them how to make wage theft almost a common practice in a business.
Let's go back to the phones. The number is 614-8980, and Alice is on the line. Alice, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Alice, you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, great. I'm a recently retired classrooms teacher. I worked in Houston ISD, and I retired at a point right after my mother had died. So I hadn't realized, I hadn't stayed close with my union rep. I should have asked more questions, but it was expected. It's institutionalized that teachers were pressured into having perfect attendance when they retire, that they are only paid for half of those hours. So it's an institutionalized practice for classroom teachers, at least in Houston ISD, and maybe across the board throughout the state. But the wise teachers, I have learned, take their sick days once they've decided to retire, and they just take them, you know, day at a time, a day a week or a day a month, until they use up all their days, because they know that they're only going to see half of that money. I think that's just...
So it's another form of wage theft.
It is. And teachers are paid a salary. They are expected to work all hours, weekends, late into the evening, until the job is done. So, yeah, I would definitely say it's wage theft.
All right, Alice, thank you for that phone call. We'll get more on that later on. But so, Christina, over at the the Workers' Defense Project, it's not. I understand that, according to a University of Texas study, that 50% of construction workers are paid in cash. There are no payroll tax deductions. They have no workers' comp. They are not given overtime. So these are areas where they will face wage theft.
Right, and the construction industry is also just a really good example of where our economy is going and why there's so many problems, is the problem of subcontracting. And subcontracting is oftentimes just about transferring risk, And in the construction industry, there are so many subcontractors on a project. And then when a worker is not paid, even if it's on a $100 million project or even on a federal project, which we've had cases on, we'll find that no one wants to take responsibility for those workers who helped build that major project in the conditions that they face or the fact that they weren't paid for their work. It's an industry that's really critical to our state, and the construction industry, developers and builders are the largest contributor to the Republican Party in our state, which of course holds some of the most important offices in Texas. And so we have some real challenges to winning better working conditions for workers in Texas and in the construction industry, where it's the most deadly and so many workers are paid off the books. It's become common practice now in the industry to just violate the rights of workers with almost total impunity.
Right. Well, I've noticed that on the Texas GOP website that they did praise Houston's action. There seems to be bipartisan support for enforcement and fairness when it comes to payment. There was also some activity in the Texas legislature, which passed with bipartisan support. So this is not a red versus blue kind of an issue.
No, definitely not wage theft. I mean, I think that there's important things to know about where the money goes to our legislature and who's funding who. But more than anything, these are issues that affect all workers and also affect as well.
Okay, we're going to continue the conversation. We're going to go to the NPR news break. When we will come back, we're going to spend the next half hour digging a little deeper into wage theft in Texas. We'll take more of your phone calls. If you've got questions, we've got experts who can answer them. Call in 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. If someone stole something from their workplace, you'd expect it would be a crime. But when an employer steals from the paychecks of their workers, that also should be a crime. It's happening with alarming frequency. It's been estimated that companies steal annually $19 billion in unpaid overtime alone. So who is the cop on the beat who's supposed to stop this corporate crime wave? Well, that would be the Department of Labor. Cynthia Ramos is the director of the San Antonio Wage and Hour Division of the Department of Labor. Cynthia, welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
We're also joined this half hour by Claire Rodriguez. She is an attorney for the Equal Justice Center here in San Antonio.
Yes, thank you.
And also, we bring in Mike Cunningham into the conversation about wage theft. Mike is the executive director of the Texas Buildings and Construction Trades Council. He does legislative and lobbying work for the construction unions. Welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having us.
So, and our phone lines are open. If you got a question about wage theft, we want to hear from you. If you've got experience, we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 614-8980, 614-8980. And you can also email us at thesource@tpr.org. So let me ask you, Cindy Ramos over at the Department of Labor, how are things going with enforcement? I do hear that we're seeing more enforcement now with wage theft issues. Talk about that.
Yes, the Department of Labor is taking a strong stance against employers who are not paying employees correctly. So we are focused on different industries out there where we see vulnerable workers that are paid or not paid the correct wages that they deserve.
So you're seeing an increasement. People are being convicted. They're being brought into court. What's happening?
Well, what we do is we go out and we investigate employers, and if we do find back wages are due, then we work with the employer to pay back the back wages. If that doesn't happen, then we have certain alternatives definitely to take. One of it is that we speak to the solicitors of labor. If they're interested in litigating the case, then of course it would go in that direction.
Because in Houston, on that ordinance that they talked about, is that a company, in order to be banned from doing business with the city or being prevented from getting their licenses and permits, that they would have to be convicted of a criminal charge of wage theft. So actually, the conviction of wage theft is really further down the line. You really have got to be doing some egregious wage theft work to get that conviction.
Right. There are some criminal aspects out there. However, We would start off with recouping the back wages, maybe imposing some civil money penalties, as well as liquidated damages if that was applicable.
Okay, we are going to go to the phones right now. We're getting calls in. The number is 614-8980. Kathy is on the line. Kathy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. My question is, we heard before the break that this is happening at a really large scale. There are groups that are working for federal contracts doing this. Is there some way to blacklist people and make sure that they aren't used? I mean, if they have to be convicted, that seems like a pretty pretty high bar. If it seems like if they're just getting small fines and paying the wages they should have been paying otherwise, why wouldn't they just continue to do this?
And so, Kathy, do you think that if consumers were made aware of major corporations like retailers that were engaged in a wage theft, that they would take action?
I think it's difficult. You know, how many choices do the consumers really have?
Well, we know places like Costco take really good care of their employees. They pay them well. And there are other big named retailers that don't do so well in that area.
But at the same time, if it's things like house building and it's subcontracting of subcontracting, it's hard to tell if it's happening.
Okay, Kathy, thank you for that phone call. Appreciate that. So let me ask you, Mike Cunningham, since you work for the Texas Buildings and Construction Trade Council, you're the executive director of that. I mean, how do consumers, you know, make sure that the construction firm that they're hiring to build their homes are actually following these rules?
Well, in our state, there's not a lot of rules, especially in the home building industry for as workers. And what we see out there is the misclassification of workers as independent contractors. So that's one of the biggest egregious things we see out there. For the question a while ago, in the federal contracts, there was the ability to go after the debarment of the contractors where they're not eligible to bid to work on federal projects. But we don't have that anywhere else here in Texas except for the new Houston City Ordinance.
So the misclassification of workers, that's where you are basically – you're working for a guy – but you're told you're contract labor, and there's the mirror test. And then you get up in the morning and you say, am I working for myself or am I actually working for this guy? And then you say, well, you know, I really am working for him, but I'm being treated like this other guy. What can be done about that?
Several issues. You know, a lot of the employers that go out there, you know, one thing we see that happens for independent contracting is one is they don't pay taxes, payroll taxes. You're your own employer. You're bidding. You're supposed to be bidding your own job. You're supposed to be in it for risk, for profit or loss. The mirror test. You know, that's what you. Am I in this for a profit, a loss, or am I just really being misclassified? And I should be getting payroll taxes taken out, paying my payroll taxes, getting my Social Security, and getting workers' comp if you're on a public funded project.
So Claire Rodriguez over at the Equal Justice Center, how do y'all deal with that?
So we're a nonprofit law firm statewide. We have offices here in San Antonio, Dallas, and in Austin. And we primarily represent low-wage, low-income workers who've been victims of wage theft. So if they haven't been paid minimum wage, haven't been made overtime, or maybe they're not being paid at all, like Christina was mentioning earlier, for their labor. What we do is civil litigation, which is, I would say, the primary and perhaps most powerful tool to prevent wage theft. We empower low-wage, low-income working men and women to access the justice system and use the law themselves to hold their employers accountable to get paid for their labor. So we help them get their back pay, the wages that they should have been paid in the first place. We help them get damages for having been cheated out of their wages. And one way that you're able to penalize an employer is to seek the recovery of your attorney's fees if the employer has dragged out the case and litigated it unnecessarily. So the court will end up paying for us to litigate the case and recover those wages.
Now, in misclassification, don't we have a new law that goes on effect January 1st, HB 2015, penalties against companies for misclassification of workers? Is it Claire?
I'm not familiar with that law, but Mike might be a little more familiar.
Yes, that law is going to affect on public projects that have taxpayer dollars in it January the 1st, 2014, which would be it's under the supervision of the Texas Workforce Commission. They would do payroll audits. A worker could file a complaint that he's not being classified properly, and they would go down, and it would be up to a $200 per worker penalty.
That's still pretty limited, not extensive, public projects only. So we hear over and over again that the Texas Workforce Commission, they're not enough teeth in their rules and regulations and laws, and a lot of workarounds for companies that want to get away from actually paying the workers what they're owed. We're going to continue the conversation. We're talking about wage theft here in San Antonio and across Texas. We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 614-8980, 614-8980. We're talking about workers' rights here on KSTX, The Source. We'll be right back.
Good afternoon. It's 3:45. I'm Steve Short with a look at San Antonio traffic. There's an accident reported on southbound I-35 at westbound Loop 410 on the southwest side. Also, watch out for an accident reported on the north side on eastbound Loop 1604 at Stone Oak Parkway. There's a 30% chance of rain tonight. It's going to be cloudy with a low around 35. It'll be partly sunny on Tuesday with a high near 52. Currently, it's cloudy. There's some scattered light rain, and it's 44 degrees in San Antonio.
KSTX traffic is made possible by RentAToyotaSanAntonio.com. Support for KSTX comes from Rackspace Hosting, the open cloud San Antonio-based company and founder of OpenStack, an open-source cloud platform. They deliver open technologies and power more than 190,000 customers worldwide. More at Rackspace.com.
You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies, talking about wage theft this hour. We've got some experts here in the studio. They can answer your questions, or we could hear what, if you've got a case to make, give us a call. It's 614-8980, 614-8980. Don is on the line. Don, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks, David. Thanks for the opportunity.
No, sir. Thank you for calling in. Go right ahead.
Well, I'm just another one of those that has been caught up in this over the approximately the past 5 years with five employers. In each case, I've missed some wages of some form or another. My understanding is that there is something in the Texas Penal Code concerning whether you have lost wages due to not being paid in full or in part. And I was wondering about that and also about the statute of limitations on these kind of things.
Okay, Don, thanks for those questions. Let's see if we can't get some answers from that, from Cynthia Ramos over at the Department of Labor. Statute of limitations.
Under the Fair Labor Standards Act, the statute of limitations is 2 years. So say you were working for an employer and you stopped working for your employer today, we would go back 2 years.
And over at Claire Rodriguez at the Equal Justice Center, what kind of laws are out there in the Texas books to protect workers like that?
There's a wide variety of laws. Like Cynthia was mentioning, there's the Fair Labor Standards Act, which says you can go back 2 years. If you can prove that the violation was willful, you can actually recover for 3 years of unpaid wages. So that's a pretty significant amount of time that you can recover for. The Texas Workforce Commission also can enforce your right to get paid under the Texas Payday Law and the Texas Minimum Wage Act. And the Texas Minimum Wage Act has a similar statute of limitations. You can go back 2 years or 3 years if you can prove that the violation was willful. There's a fairly quick amount of time that you have to go to the Texas Workforce Commission. They can only enforce back a couple of months. So you really have to, if you want to go and have the state enforce your right, you have to act pretty quickly through them.
So you go online, you can make phone calls. How does an employee start taking action? How do they get the ball rolling? Cynthia?
You can contact the Department of Labor at 4-US-WAGE, or that's 1-866-487-9243.
So you can call that number. But now we know that people generally, they're working Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. till 6 p.m. or even later. How accommodating can you be for workers who are working that clock?
That would not be an issue. We would definitely accommodate the worker. We'd make arrangements to contact them at a later time.
And Claire, I mean, can people call you if they've got some questions? Who do they call? How do they do that?
Yes, that's one great thing about the Equal Justice Center. Part of our mission, in addition to trying to recover people's wages, is also to act as a community resource to educate people. So our phones are available almost 24 hours a day. We are at, in San Antonio, 210-308-6222. Again, that's 210-308-6222, and we're happy to answer quickly any questions somebody might have about a situation that's going on at their workplace, if they're concerned that their employer is changing their terms and conditions of employment, or they have a question about something that's going on. We're happy to quickly provide an answer on that.
Okay, we do have a lot of calls here and try and get through them through our last 10 minutes here. Melvin is on the line. Melvin, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'd like to know if it's considered wage theft. If you punch in on a time clock on an assembly line, and as the particular job you're working on is completed, they required you to punch out and stay on the premises or in the vicinity or in the break room until another assembly line was set up. And then you punch back in on that line.
That's a good question.
That's my question.
All right, Melvin, that's a good question. Let's see if we can get some sort of response to that. Claire.
Yeah, Melvin, that is a great question. I can't give legal advice just over the radio here. I would definitely, advise you to consult an attorney. But generally, time that's spent for the benefit of your employer is time that they're required to compensate you for. If you have more questions, you should contact the EJC, 210-308-6222.
Yeah, that sounds like a question that the Department of Labor should be able to answer.
Right. Thank you, Melvin. And definitely we'd like to ask you some more questions about those type of situations. You can definitely call our office. It does sound like it could possibly be a violation. You could call us at 210-308-4515. That's the local number.
We're living in an era right now where it's a partial recovery. It's still kind of it's dicey out there if you're unemployed, and it seems like there are businesses out there who are willing to take advantage of that. And the corporate office is pushing harder on the middle management. They're telling you to do more with less. I mean, you hear over and over, more with less, more. And how do you do more with less? You tell people not to clock in or to clock out early and maybe work overtime or take some work home with you and bring it back done in the morning. Is that wage theft, or is that a form of what we're talking about, Claire?
It would really depend. Again, I can't give out legal advice over the radio, but it would really depend on the kind of employment relationship you're in. But we do hear it all the time where managers say, well, you're going to work over 40 hours a week, but we're just going to pay you those over 40 hours at your straight time, at your regular rate, without compensating you for overtime. And we see this not only in small companies, not only in the construction industry, but also in large, very successful companies where they're trying to outbid their competition by unfairly and illegally paying their employees.
So Mike Cunningham, Executive Director of the Texas Building and Construction Trades Council, you're a union man. Do you kind of say, organize, folks?
One thing you have to look at us in the unions and construction industry, we don't have to worry about wage theft. We have collective bargaining that protects our rights. We have things like workers' compensation. We have benefits, medical and pension. So these issues, not like that, but harm to the workers out there not being paid properly makes it very uncompetitive. Our contractors are being taken advantage of not playing by the rules.
The number to call if you want to jump into this conversation about wage theft, 614-8980. I've got an email I want to read here. Hello, I've had an experience several years ago that was a little different from what we've heard in this discussion so far. I was working at a server at a popular sports bar in San Antonio. Management would give us a time to be at work, but if we weren't busy yet, we weren't allowed to clock in just yet. They would require us to be there but not actually work up for an hour. I ended up quitting after I did this to me 5 times in 1 week. The manager told me this was a common practice in the industry, but I had never experienced this in any other place where I worked at. So, you know, you work at a restaurant, not that many customers yet. The waitresses or waiters are there, wait for the dinner crowd to show up, and then you can clock in and start going to work. So is that something that the Department of Labor would be able to address?
Absolutely. We do run into that from time to time in the restaurant industry. Where
is it right or wrong?
It's wrong. If an employer requires you to show up at a certain time and they make you wait until, say, your section gets busy before you can clock in, that definitely is a violation.
Okay. So we're talking about workers and their workers' rights. Do people know what their workers' rights? How do you get educated about what you can and can't do? I mean, so Claire Rodriguez over at the Equal Justice Center.
People, I think, are generally familiar with the idea that they should be making minimum wage, and if they're working over 40 hours a week, they should generally make overtime. But people have a lot of questions about how the law applies to their specific situation. People in restaurants might not know they're supposed to make at least $2.13 an hour, might not know that they can only be forced to share their tips with certain people. The Department of Labor has really great resources on their website broken down by specific industries that speak specifically about what rights employees have. The Texas Workforce Commission also has some great resources on their website. And, of course, calling any one of our offices, everybody can get the basic information that they need to know about their workers' rights.
So, Mike Cunningham, earlier you were talking about occupational misclassification, and that was a big problem here locally. Talk about that.
Well, it's not just locally. It's all over the state and the entire country where you have prevailing wages, where you have a classification where somebody might be misclassified as a pipe fitter, and then they do an air conditioning work, but they classify them as an HVAC technician. And there might be a $15 or $20 an hour wage difference in that just by that misclassifying. And when you don't pay the worker their proper wages and classifying properly, whether it be on a federal or state or local prevailing wage job, to us that's another form of wage theft. That worker should be paid that money and be classified properly. And that's things we try to help enforce and help workers make sure that they get paid properly.
And this is something that they would take up with their shop boss or union shop or whatever? How?
Well, like I said, for the unions, we really don't deal with that problem. It's workers that's not represented by a union that works for a merit shop company. They have to go out there. A lot of times they find out they've been misclassified and they'll come to us. How do we help? How can we help you? We can either send them to an attorney or send them to Equal Justice Center or other attorneys, or we can recommend them to go to the DOL. And some of us will even help the workers go help them file a complaint.
It just seems like there's so many different ways that an employer who's motivated can sort of skirt around it and sort of eat away at the fringe. It's interesting that Houston did take the bull by the horns and come up with and pass an ordinance there last week that put some teeth locally into their fight against wage theft. And do you think that something like that would be a benefit here in San Antonio, Claire?
I definitely think that would be extremely helpful in San Antonio. There are a lot of low-wage workers here who are victims of wage theft, and I think it would be very important for our city council to get out ahead of the ball and try and take some kind of action to prevent wage theft here.
So if Houston can pass an anti-wage theft ordinance, then San Antonio could probably do it also.
I'm looking at you, City Council.
All right, Claire Rodriguez, she's from the Equal Justice Center. We've also got Cynthia Ramos from the Department of Labor. Mike Cunningham, he's with the unions. This is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.